As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Hold on to your butt.
Hold on to your butts.
So that would be an L for today.
Nine to noon.
Personal foul. Clipping.
Personal foul. Clipping.
Roughing the passer.
Racing.
High fives for everybody.
Big boys back.
Yes, way, it's 9 to noon. Father. What's up? Let me get this Twitter thing going to promote said ditty. And then we will kick off Hump Day. Always. FM 100.3, the band.
To remember being a king's me not.
I want you to remember
those were the days.
What up, Nordo?
Good morning, sir.
Your wife wear high heels to work today?
Yes, she did.
Were they stilettos?
No, they were not.
Pop, pop.
She does a lot of walking, so it's got to combine, I believe, fashion and function.
Is it a perceived plight of the woman? High heels? I decided to put it on the narrowcasting leader Twitter yesterday with a poll that just ended. Followers of @PA on the mic, the super special Twitter handle. High heel wearing followers only. Is it a complete buzzkill wearing high heels? Or, nah, it's mostly just fine. The first response to said ditty via the Twitter machine was from Johnny the Mouse Mickelson.
I always love that one.
Captain of the Wayzata Club hockey team. I didn't realize wearing high heels was part of his turn-on. But now I do. And it had yours truly thinking yesterday, and a little bit today, about the perceived plight of a woman. Emphasis on the word perceived, because 9 to noon doesn't want to blanket anybody's plight. I mean, what's the age-old cliche that producer Nordo created? Somebody's garbage is another person's gold? Something like that?
Yeah.
It's another 9 to noon meaty topic of the day.
Mm.
But this one has no prize tied to it. Yesterday's meaty topic of the day involved Becky Hammon and potentially coaching the Milwaukee Bucks. Oh, by the way, 9 to noon devotees, Twins a half game out of first, absolutely getting to that. I have opted today to unfurl my star of Vikings rookie camp. I got people tapping on me left and right from Boston to Denver and every town in between, looking for a big opinion. Don't really have a gargantuan opinion on Vikings rookie camp, but I do have a rookie camp winner of the week. Houston plays Golden State in the Western Conference Finals. That's fat. Winnipeg's at Nashville tomorrow night. That's fat. And truly in the life changer for many involved, Sunday indeed will be Romero Ohtani. Oh my God.
It's going to be awesome.
What a baseball-related L for wives, girlfriends, moms, yeah, and grandmammies.
Get that brunch and lunch out of the way quickly, because 3 p.m., it's all over.
Eric, I always talk to you about being on your phone so much. My God, it's Mother's Day. Do you have to be watching this Twins game?
I'm sorry, Molly.
While we're at super special brunch on Mother's Day?
I'm sorry, Molly.
9 to noon forever is looking out for women and needs answers regarding this situation. Let's rephrase that. 9 to noon is not necessarily only looking at or out for women. We are looking out for perceived plights of women and need answers regarding scenarios. It's the perceived plight of the woman. Doesn't have much to do with jobs or the Athletics coverage or lack thereof of the WNBA.
I always love that one.
Nah. There are plenty of well-respected women who lead companies, and while equal wage and earnings power may be a meaty topic of the day for another time, our question to kick off 9 to noon, is wearing high heels uncomfortable?
Oh my gosh, you are above average at that.
It's the newest meaty topic of the day. Seriously. It happened again this morning. Yours truly stops by a coffee spot en route to Planet Utica. And I saw it again today. Sometimes watching women walk in high heels makes my feet hurt. Ladies, email some quickies if you have time to booth@kfan.com. It's the Bradshaw and Brian inbox, helping us feel better about your perceived plight. Is this my perceived plight of the woman or our perceived plight of the woman?
Well, now that you bring it up, it's something I can't imagine what it's like, especially in a corporate environment.
Same.
You're running from meeting to meeting to meeting.
Same.
Here, there, and everywhere. Got to go to lunch. Got to go to and fro.
Right.
Maybe you commute. You're on the bus. You're standing up for 20 minutes.
Right.
Not only are you already next to the guy on the bus that smells awful, and you have to sit in traffic on 94 while dealing with his hygiene and body odor issues.
Okay.
You have to deal with absolute pain in your feet and the callousing.
Right.
And the uncomfortable nature of constantly standing on your tiptoes.
But wait, it's perceived. Because again, it's the perceived plight of the woman. I mean,
that's a good point.
Unless
maybe they love it.
Unless there are times you have worn high heels and you have not shared, and I changed my name to RuPaul Allen and wore high heels on a swanky night, it has to be the perceived plight of the woman wearing high heels and said uncomfort, blisters, walking on toes, and the whole thing. That goes along with it.
Well, if there's a lovely lady out there wearing size 13s right now, I will try on your high heels. I will do it. But I haven't found that person yet.
See, with the perceived plight of the woman and wearing high heels, I mean, it's not like you gawk or stare at them when they walk. But like, I mean, we'll see it. It's like sometimes when they walk, they're wobbly.
Yeah.
The slender heel, I think in the business they call it a stiletto, that sucker always looks like it's going to break.
Yep.
So you don't want to be staring too long or like inadvertently sliding into a stiletto's DMs. But you look at those skinny bad boys that are like 2 inches tall or something.
Yeah.
The suckers look like they're going to break all the time.
Have you ever seen someone walking and break a heel PA?
No.
It is like the Gordon Hayward ankle injury.
Ooh.
It is gruesome.
Would you laugh?
And they hit... I laugh to myself. Typical passive. I'm not going to point and gawk and guffaw.
Right.
But, I mean, it's an amusing moment. That's part of my perceived plight.
Right.
Why do you put yourselves through that?
Thank you.
It's flip-flop season.
There is nary a shoe worn by man that is uncomfortable. Can I get a witness? Tennis shoes, loafers, slides, boots, sandals, flip-flops. All necessary and all extremely comfortable.
Very comfortable.
The meaty question. Why wear heels? What's the purpose if they are uncomfortable? It plays into the perceived plight of the woman.
Hmm.
If ladies and 9 to noon... did a very unofficial 3-woman poll yesterday about high heels, and they all said they're uncomfortable as bleep. So, like, my immediate response was, then why wear them? I mean, if you're putting yourself in a situation that you know is going to be uncomfortable minute by minute, hour after hour, day by day, month by month, year by year, and lifetime by lifetime, then why wear them if they're uncomfortable?
Even the beautiful, wonderful, amazing Mrs. Nordquist, I haven't been to her cube at work in a while, But I remember at one point she would have 6 or 7 other pairs of shoes at work, like flats, because the heels suck. And so you go to work and you wear the heels in a special moment, but while you're chilling in the cube, you're sneaking back on those flats again. It's a perceived plight from our end because we don't know. But it seems like it's an unnecessary part of your day that you could easily eliminate.
Here come the ladies to Booth at KFAN.com. The real Azure. Wearing high heels is an acquired feeling. Initially, they're always uncomfortable. Once you get used to it, you have now convinced yourself it's uncomfortable. So it's the stylistic version of like walking on hot coals. You know when you jump on them for the first time, it's going to hurt, but you are establishing some form of mental tenacity that not only will help you that day at work, it will help you the rest of your lives and through the perceived plight of a woman.
It's like me wearing a collared shirt. It's uncomfortable. I don't like it, but in society, it's good to wear it sometimes. And you convince yourself that it's okay and that it's comfortable.
Aaron W. Aaron Wach. Ladies enjoy the attention they get from the perceived plight. I wear heels every day. They're not torture devices. If you're willing to drop a little cash on them, they're quite comfortable and stylish.
Oh, perfect.
Let's be honest. Women enjoy being martyrs. The most uncomfortable those heels look, the more men are willing to open doors for them.
I always love that.
Well done, young lady. Some wear them. Now, with my unofficial polling of 3 women yesterday, some wear them because it finishes an outfit, shapes their legs better, makes them feel taller, and even sexier. But when you start your day with uncomfortable shoes, it just seems to buzzkill the entire experience of walking. So, like, perceived plight of the woman. Do you wear them days you don't have to do a lot of walking or standing? I mean, is it a thought-out process? Jennifer Duncanson. I work at a corporate job, wear heels about 90% of the time. I also wear them going out and to church. I wear them with jeans, skirts, dresses, and dress pants. I even wore heels to the Minneapolis Miracle game. The key? Choosing quality heels and knowing the height that will work for you. Nothing is more embarrassing than a woman who is struggling to walk in her heels.
Yeah.
And that is what triggered the perceived plight of the woman. As I'm leaving FM 100.3 The Fan yesterday, there was this lady in these stilettos in front of me, and it was a wobbly situation, to put it mildly.
Sometimes, God bless them, they look like they're walking on stilts. And it looks uncomfortable.
It wasn't a saunter. It was wobbly. Karen Brandt, Booth at KFAN.com. Karen in Duluth, good morning. The only reason women wear high heels is because men like the way women look in heels. Why else would women live through the pain? I didn't say it. She did.
Wow.
We didn't. 9 to Noon did not say it. It's a perceived plight of the woman. But again, in my polling of 3 women yesterday about high heels, they all said they're uncomfortable as bleep, but they help finish an outfit, shape the legs better,
yeah,
make them feel taller, and at times, even sexier.
Well, it's about, for a woman, it's about her feeling good about herself, right? So that's the key. Now, for me, I will say that if a woman is beautiful, whether she's wearing heels, a pair of Nikes, barefoot, a pair of flip-flops.
Same.
I never take the heels or footwear into account.
Ponytail out of baseball cap with sweatshirt, let's play.
When recognizing beauty, the shoes never matter,
yeah,
at least to me. But if a woman feels better wearing them, then that's the struggle and the burden they carry.
Gleeman's biggest fan, Yehuda Cohen, who listens daily.
Oh, Yehuda, checking in. Sweet.
From Chicago at Booth at KFAN.com. Thinks we're on dangerous ground.
Yeah, probably.
To guys like you and me, this seems obvious. Why wear heels if they're uncomfortable? But there is a societal issue here. You are encroaching on a very sensitive issue. The need to conform to societal fashion standards for women. Tread very lightly. Wow! That's why it's the meaty topic of the day.
Now, in fairness, looking at you in the captain's chair, me here, do we look like a couple of people conforming or worried about conforming to societal pressure as it pertains to any sort of fashion statement, PA?
Danielle Johnson is straight up with a Bradshaw and Brian inbox. Heels give me confidence in my appearance.
Yeah.
They can be uncomfortable, but it really isn't that bad. They aren't all uncomfortable.
Okay.
It's a straightforward approach. Jennifer Gumbel, this is an attorney, so we better be careful.
Oh.
Get that lawsuit on.
The barrister.
My rules for work are Mr. Rogers, flats, and cardigan. I got stuff to do, y'all. Heels are for fancy dinners and Vegas. Very pragmatic.
Well, she's about business.
Very simplistic, business-like, straightforward approach to the perceived plight of the woman. There was no perceived plight for a certain offensive player, a rookie for the Minnesota Vikings last weekend at the Vikings rookie camp. We will celebrate him, and I will unfurl my yearly rookie camp star of the week when 9 to noon continues on your stiletto-wearing leader, FM 100.3 The Fan. This is 9 to noon.
I think you're one of the smartest people I know. You're basically a king in the radio business.
On The Fan.
Programming On The Fan brought to you in part by Bradshaw and Bryant.
One email to Booth at KFAN.com. Only one sexist-related email. I was on the lookout for several.
Yeah, that we were being
somehow
sexist?
Yeah, like,
okay.
why focused on the perceived plight of the woman? It's because we care.
Yeah.
I mean, this is your loving and caring about humanity leader. But paraphrasing the email, it basically had to do with... How come you don't focus on the perceived plight of the man and having to wear a necktie? Is that uncomfortable? Do they do that bowing to societal pressure? Kind of. I mean, there are times people wear ties. And I wear ties many times during the course of the year.
How do you fit that neck in there when you get that tie going?
I just got to keep increasing the neck size on the shirts. That's the answer. Whatever, maybe it's societal pressure. I like wearing ties. I like wearing dress shirts. I like wearing ties. I like wearing suits. I don't like wearing them every single day, but I like the opportunity I get to wear them.
None of that potentially causes calluses, like open sores from a new pair of shoes.
Thank you.
Ingrown toenails, things like that. We have it okay.
Right.
So I think it's all right that we, for a moment, just wondered how that works and what the plight's all about.
The perceived plight of the woman was born of caring and love.
Yes.
With the potential of uncomfortable looking heels on stilettos breaking and somebody taking some form of ankle breaking out. In terms of the perceived plight of the man and bowing to societal pressure by wearing a tie, it's not like it's a noose. It's not like you tighten it so tightly and then you hold it above your head like it's a noose. Completely different proverbial apples and oranges. Vikings rookie camp, 9 to noon, is your evaluation and analysis of Minnesota Vikings rookie camp leader, and has been for many years. Yours truly focused on it for a segment on Monday, for a segment on Tuesday. We have been saving the best for last. Because I truly believe the Vikings hit on a good one with this guy.
Lofton one to the end zone. Jump ball tipped. Did he catch it? touchdown! Former basketball player.
Yeah, from Chesterfield, Michigan. This was a straight fade the whole way. And he's doing some hand fighting with Richards, but goes up and secures it with one hand. I love how he waited and looked at the ref the whole time, waiting for the signal, because I don't know if he knew that he secured it the whole time. Tipped it to himself twice, and I think that's good.
Tyler Conklin, courtesy of Fox Sports Football.
They never said his name in the highlight. His name is Tyler Conklin, fifth-round wide receiver from Central Michigan. Negatories immediately will think... Doesn't matter. If Kirk Cousins doesn't have time, he won't be able to get the ball to anybody anyway. The offense, 9 to noon, believes the offensive line, like last year, will be fine. Skull stories from rookie camp. Like Mike Hughes. I like Hughes. I'm willing to wait for O'Neal to develop and catch TD passes as a right tackle. Holmes is a physical freak, and God bless the kicker. Tyler Conklin opened my eyes most with the myriad reps yours truly took in a couple of days at Minnesota Vikings rookie camp. Like Thielen and Diggs, you look for pass catchers to run routes at full speed and break them off at the right depth. Conklin is a very quick study, from what I understand. And he's so strong that jamming him at the line, I believe, in regular season games, will be a problem. I think fans are going to dig his quick twitch because he's big and sturdy, yet main man definitely has some twitch to his game. Tyler Conklin, I envision him playing immediately and being used frequently. Kirk Cousins with his tight ends. Vernon Davis averaged 14 yards per catch on 87 receptions with Kirk Cousins. The talented Jordan Reed. Now, this is a former third-round pick, you know, where Conklin goes in the fifth round, and Jordan Reed has battled some injury-related L's. But when he's been playing 26 games with Cousins in 2015 and 16, Jordan Reed, tight end like Tyler Conklin, 2015 and 2016, 17 TDs. Oh, my God.
Above average.
Fires deep left side. Caught Tyler Conklin, 10-5 touchdown. Thielen and Diggs outside, and with Cook in the backfield, that trio is better than anything Cousins ever had in Washington. Don't at me with DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon together, because then we get to the running backs, and that's the end of the equation. This will permit Rudolph and or Conklin to beat one-on-one coverage. Tyler Conklin excites me. His changes of route speeds will excite fans and befuddle defenders. Now, had a bad foot injury preseason 2017. The intel indicates that is completely healed. So I'm hoping the Minnesota Vikings hit on this guy and he fits in wonderfully. Tyler Conklin, he's the 9 to noon rookie camp star of the weekend. AG in studio next.
You're listening to PA.
P-A-U-L-A-L-L-E-N. There are 9 letters. There is a reason 33% of my name includes the letter L.
On the Fan.
Hey, check this out. You can enter to win a pair of tickets to see Hall & Oates and Train at the XL Energy Center May 16th. KFAN.com, keyword contest to enter for those. And stay tuned to 9 to noon later in the show. I have a pair of tickets that I'll be giving away. So stay tuned to the entire 9 to noon broadcast for that.
All that science stuff, that comes from Jesus.
The voice of the Vikings. Gleeman. L. Wins Techie.
About your favorite sport, which means your favorite sport has a league-wide channel. It's like yours truly, Vikings favorite team, NFL favorite game, NFL Network,
sure,
league-wide channel. So last night, because to stay up to speed with the Twins Techie, and by the way, good morning, Aaron Gleeman, AaronGleeman.com, at Aaron Gleeman via Twitter. Very controversial on Twitter. If you're looking for a scintillating, controversial follow, it is at Aaron Gleeman. And he, believe it or not, still is editor-in-chief at Baseball Prospectus.
Thank you.
So to keep up to speed with the techie, I have, you know, I decided I wanted my Comcast bill to get that much closer to $1,000 a month.
Yeah, wasn't big enough, yeah.
It's freaking ridiculous.
Yeah, you need four digits instead of...
Yeah, I mean, I needed it to get, you know, closer to $1,000 than maybe $500. So I decided to add the extra innings bet.
Yeah.
Knowing I'm not going to sit there and, like, bounce between Cleveland and Milwaukee, Diamondbacks and Dodgers. But in living vicariously through the techie, there are times I won't execute it, but I want to feel like I'm living in a single bed with sheets that have baseball helmets on them, a George Foster poster to my left.
That's a new one for you. Okay. Yeah, go on.
A Joe Rudy poster to my right.
Switching up the middle. I like this.
And straight ahead of me, a poster in a red bathing suit of Adrian's Barbeau's.
Okay, that's a standby one. Yeah.
And then on my TV, while I lay in bed and either eat Pop-Tarts or Kung Pao chicken, I watch baseball. I mean, that's your life. And this is the non-judgmental leader.
Uh-huh.
So to, like, live vicariously through that.
And that sounds good to you, is what you're saying.
I dove in and got the extra innings bet.
Yeah.
So.
Welcome.
I was in the sinkhole, don't know what I was doing, basketball game was boring, no NHL, Twins weren't playing. So I popped on to Seattle, Toronto.
Yeah.
Got no idea why. We're going to the bottom of the eighth,
yeah,
and something called James Paxton, a Canadian native, has a no-hitter in Toronto. And, like, Toronto needs the Davenport of love more than Minnesota sports fans. Swept by LeBron.
That's true.
Bronze plan, as all the kids say on Twitter. And got no idea what's up with the Argonauts. Team probably sucks. And the Maple Leafs got bounced around one of the playoffs. So Toronto is prime Davenport of love material. So I'm watching your guy Paxton. And boom, boom, boom. 1, 2, 3, bottom of the eighth. So then I go to Twitter. Now, this is as perceived or as self-proclaimed king of the rubes. And, you know, wanting to put those on quality sports snobbery, I went to Twitter saying, no alert.
Yeah.
Paxton, Seattle, heading to the ninth against the Blue Jays. So then Seattle gets out top nine. So we go bottom nine. So without even thinking about it, just thinking your favorite sports league-wide channel would do the right thing. I just went to Twitter and said, Seattle just went 1, 2, 3 or whatever. No alert continues. Bottom nine. I'd imagine at MLB Network
right.
Has to pick it up.
For people who don't have the MLB extra innings package, you're saying, you can catch the final three outs here.
For sure.
Everybody can watch it.
Yeah, you don't have to go through the single bed Kung Pao chicken pain of watching five innings of it up to the no-no. You can be there for the cliched money shot.
Yeah, and keep your DirecTV bill relatively low.
Thank you. So then I go to MLB Network, which was carrying Yankees and Red Sox, and I was so pissed off, even after one out in the bottom of the ninth from Toronto, MLB Network still had a split screen with Yankees, Red Sox, and no-no.
Did they? That is annoying. But did they at least switch? What was the audio?
Got no idea.
You didn't have the audio on.
Well, no. If they're metering me, they took an L. Because then I went back to the extra innings bit
right.
And took in the Blue Jays
right.
Feed. So I could, like, get it, A, full screen, B, feel the vibe. And I'm like, Red Sox, Yankees. I mean, I'm not one of these cliched Twitter individuals who's like, oh, my God, another Sunday night baseball right. Game with Red Sox and Yankees. Oh, it's going to be 4.5 hours. I like Red Sox, Yankees.
Right.
I like Severino and whomever anytime. I like your guy Giancarlo hitting 2 home runs. It's all good. But when you run a league-fueled network, it is your obligation to jettison whatever's transpiring with what you're carrying and go full screen with what ended up being the season's third no-hitter, and you carry it from the bottom of the ninth when it starts until the end through the celebration. Can I get a witness?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you can certainly take 8 minutes away from your 35th Red Sox-Yankees game of the season
mm-hmm.
to show that. I agree. But you're better off on the local feeds at a time like that.
But not everybody has access to the local feed.
Yeah, I agree.
They don't want their DirecTV bill to be a nickel and my Comcast bill to be a dime.
That's true. It was James. And by the way, previously, he's had like 16 strikeout game already this season. He's also the guy.
It was his previous start.
Yeah. Twins fans may remember as the guy at Twins opening day at Target Field.
Yeah.
When the eagle came flying and that's the guy who landed on his shoulder.
I know.
And he reacted in the most amazing way I've ever seen. I would have shrieked and run.
Yeah.
James Paxton just kind of stood there and looked at the eagle until it flew away. So I feel he deserves to throw a no-hitter just based on his reaction to an eagle landing.
I didn't go millennial overboard on Twitter and just go nuts. I mean, I'm right, correct? I mean, you jettison Yanks. I don't care if it's top nine, two outs, 3-2 Yanks. Here's the pitch. You jettison it and you go to no-no.
Although, do you think in their mind, their thought was, if this was the sixth inning of the Yankees game, we go to that no-hitter, no problem.
It had to be.
But didn't they envision like, ooh, we're going to get tweets and calls, how can you get rid of the end of the Red Sox Yankees game?
But it's an easy easy response with which to combat. It's a no hitter. Red Sox Yankees happens every 3 weeks. No hitters happen 3 or 4 times a year, maybe.
Yeah, and if Red Sox and Yankees fans are known for anything, it's for being reasonable,
right,
and calm and understanding people who are willing to share the spotlight with other teams and are not obsessed with their own teams.
My God. Your baseball team is one half game out of first,
yeah,
despite getting swept by Tampa and losing that series to Toronto.
Wow.
And when I put that on Twitter last night, because, you know, with keeping living vicariously through the techies, after the no-no during basketball, for whatever the reason, Milwaukee-Cleveland was like running a little long. So I watched Milwaukee close out Cleveland.
Yep.
Went to Twitter. Oh, my God. Despite losing 12 of 14, everything through which Twins fans have been, you're a half game out of first place. So then, of course, given it's Twitter, the narrow casting leader, bad division, weak competition, nothing about which to be proud.
Yeah.
Everybody sucks. Life sucks. Oh, my God, where's stilettos? I mean, the whole thing was diseased.
I am amazed how many people on Twitter reply to stuff like that, pointing out the most obvious, we know that the division's bad. That's the whole point of why it's amazing that they're a half game out.
Great.
Like, we know if they're not in the AL East. Like, that's the whole point.
Thank you.
Like, that's the whole, they wouldn't be in this. I wonder, like, when people fire off those tweets, they go, ooh, I bet you PDA didn't realize that they weren't 30-10 right now. I bet you. Once he's going to double check those standings, he's going to change his whole night. Yeah. He's going to go, ooh, the Twins aren't the best. They don't have the best. Ooh, I'm glad this egg on Twitter told me. But
I don't care if it's the AFC South of MLB.
Of course. Like,
a half game out of first ain't nothing but good news.
The playoff spot still cashes. The checks still cash. And the amazing thing is that coming into the season, I was among almost everyone who assumed that Cleveland was the very, very strong favorite in the division. And they may still be. They got off to a relatively slow start last year and won 100 games. All that stuff may still happen. Mm-hmm. But the focus for the Twins was so much on one of the wild card spots, and people were hyped up about that even. And now it's like, well, the wild card might be out of reach because the AL East and the AL West both have two teams that are going nuts, you know, charging towards 100 wins. But it's better to win the division anyway, because then you get a full series. B, you don't have to go to either Fenway or Yankee Stadium and play a coin flip game, which is a weighted coin anyway, not in the Twins' favor. And
so,
this not having the wild card as a fallback.
Yeah.
Is not ideal, because I still think the Indians should be considered the pretty heavy favorites in the division. But basically, they've trimmed 30 games off of the season, and now they're right back where they started on opening day. And in any sport, think of basketball or football, the heavy underdog in any individual game wants to, you know, run the clock, have fewer possessions, because they want to have more chance involved. And so going from now, you don't have to beat the Indians for 162 games. Mm-hmm. You just got to beat the Indians for 130 games. And, you know, for as much as Twins fans have felt frustrated by how they've played, and it was a mess when they were losing 12 out of 14, imagine you're an Indians fan. When you came into the season, you thought they were going to win 105. They were going to, you know, cruise to the playoff spot, cruise to the division title. And now you're looking around and you're going, well, they didn't hit for a month. They got some injuries.
Yeah.
Are we starting to see kind of the deterioration of a super strong team, and now they're just maybe a pretty good team? I still think if their pitching gets right, they have the ability to go on a crazy good run. But, I mean, for the Twins to live through what they lived through and come out the other side, basically just reset the season after 6 weeks, it's amazing.
How much does this excite you? You mentioned one game wild card bit. Who cares? Who should fear this if you're a Twins fan? Luis Severino hosting Fernando Romero.
I always love that.
Come on!
One.
Romero, Romero, wherefore art thou, Romero?
I mean, I would like to get a full series just because then you're guaranteed a home game.
And Romero three times.
At least twice, yeah. But Romero, I think, you know, his debut was exceptionally exciting. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to keep myself in check a little and not go nuts. Mm-hmm. It was difficult, and then he comes out in his second start and is arguably even more impressive.
Yeah.
And I don't have the ability to say for sure how hard a guy threw in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, estimates, but you can't say this guy averaged 95.2 or whatever.
There is a little bit of an asterisk with his Monday game.
Why is that?
St. Louis's two best hitters on DL, and maybe their best player, Matt Carpenter, for whatever the reason, sucks right now.
Right. It's still...
It's a tiny asterisk.
Both lineups he's faced have been at least pretty good lineups. He's not out there, you know, mowing through the Royals and the White Sox or something like that. But I think there's a very good chance he is literally the hardest throwing starting pitcher in the history of the Minnesota Twins.
What?
And...
History?
I mean, think of one that throws harder.
Damn.
I'm talking guys who have not just made one start and be gone, but guys who have actually going to stick in the rotation.
Right.
Averaging 96.1 miles an hour on his fastball, which is incredible.
That's his average?
Yeah, his average as a starter, which you rarely see. And he's maintained it first inning, fourth inning, sixth inning.
Yeah.
And the thing that I think is most exciting about Romero is, A, he's 23 years old. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that velocity, which is enough to just overpower people, the movement on his fastball is incredible. He's not going to give up very many home runs because he's inducing ground balls because nobody's really squaring up, getting the barrel on that. And then you also watch him throw his slider against left-handed hitters. And they're just chasing it out of the zone. He's getting strikeouts that way.
Yep.
And he has a pretty decent third pitch in a changeup. So he's not just a guy who's going to try to go there and throw 96 by everyone over and over and over again.
They ain't got no film on him.
That's true, too. I mean, there's going to be...
They're amassing it, but...
There's going to be adjustments made to him.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, he's got, what, 13 scoreless innings so far. Mm-hmm. There's going to be some rough patches for a 23-year-old, but think of some of the 23, 22, 24-year-old pitchers, including Barrios, that we saw when they debut, sometimes they just look like a deer in the headlights.
Right.
So for this guy to come up with his stuff and his pedigree as a prospect and what he did in the minors, and coming back, he's only like a year and a half, 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery himself. So for him to be doing that now and to step right in there and be a guy that now, all of a sudden, instead of just how long is he going to stay, the question is who's going to get the boot from the rotation when Irvin Santana comes back. And I know Lavelle is trying to start Twitter beefs with you over that topic.
A little bit. I brought it up twice last week.
Yeah.
I mean, after his Toronto start, and I was being flippant last week because I get the marathon, not sprint bit. That's why while all of your super special followers on Twitter during the lose 12 of 14 were freaking out, it's over, Valvy Levine overrated, bring back Terry Ryan, and can Carl Pavano still pitch? I was like, is it marathon, not sprint, or not?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't, when things are hot, cool the jets and be like, nah, we still got 138 games left. But when it's bad, we still have 138 games left, too.
Yeah, it's for whatever reason, it's just so difficult. Because I think people, the only way to really watch and talk about baseball to be like sort of accurate in how important each game is, would be to just kind of go, yeah, that was a game or that was a week. But that's not fun to do while you're watching it.
Yeah.
It's fun to talk about individual games and individual at-bats and decisions and bullpen moves and all that.
Yeah.
And those ultimately are relatively meaningless in the grand scheme. Even losing 12 out of 14, we're not even a week removed from that. It was 6 days ago that bad stretch ended. And like you said, they're already a half game just out of first place. It's really tough for whatever reason, and I'm guilty of it too to some extent, to get it through everyone's heads that, like, yeah, as long as you're not 15 games out at the end of April, you got 130-something games left, but it's just impossible. The human brain or the fandom or the rube brain is just not equipped to deal with that.
The Minnesota Twins and Anaheimers are set to ruin Mother's Day. We'll explain what we mean next.
You're listening to PA.
Who's the best guy on KFan?
Probably Paul Allen. He does the Viking games.
Paul Allen. I don't know if I know him. Paul Allen.
On on the Fan.
Fill out your very own backyard makeover wish list with our friends at Patio Town and sign up now for your chance to win a $25,000 backyard makeover. Whoa! Head to KFAN.com, type in the keyword contest to win.
Sneaking up on 10 o'clock, 9 to noon, FM 100.3 The Fan. Radio show originates tomorrow from Twin Cities Orthopedics Performance Center. That is your Eagan home of the Minnesota Vikings. Several guests to join us on air, on site, on demand, and on fire, including the analyst Pete Bursich, the sideline analyst Ben Lieber, and new defensive tackle Sheldon Richardson. All scheduled to join the show tomorrow. A comprehensive preview of Twinigmatics and Anaheimers and the four-game ditty. That will transpire tomorrow in the neighborhood of 9:35. TCO Performance Center tomorrow. This is 9 to noon. Mother's Day is Sunday.
Yeah.
What super special plans do you have for your beloved Judy?
Got a brunch planned.
Whoa. So you're leaving the house.
I'm leaving the house. Aggressive. Yeah. I'm not going to walk there, though.
That's aggressive.
Sad to say. Sorry.
Beloved BJ going to be in tow?
She will, yeah.
Whoa!
No, I decided I'm going to leave her home, I decided.
Well, she ain't a mommy.
That's true.
And she's not a wife.
Yeah, but she's the...
So you could put the L on her and feel okay about it.
She's the buffer between my mom and I at these things.
Okay, so you got Judy set up.
Yeah.
What time is said brunch?
Well, this is the tricky part.
Yes, because the twins and the Anaheimers are ruining Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Why? Because Fernando Romero is facing off against Shohei Ohtani in the absolute pitching pairing of the season.
Yeah. No,
that's Sunday at like 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock, which is that's just right in the middle of everything.
Oh, yes.
I thought, well, let's, you know, make these brunch plans by 1 o'clock because we got Gleeman and the Geek here on KFAN at 4.
Whoa.
Except now, you got
to... So you have the life changer while you're on the radio.
Yeah, well, the whole day's a mess now because now it's like, well, we got to breeze through brunch, which I'm sort of okay with.
Why? Brunch and you like food.
I know, isn't brunch in the morning?
Listen, Nordo. What? Who do you, the cops?
Is brunch in the morning?
I mean...
10:30-ish, 11-ish?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to wake up that early.
No, I
understand. Because afternoon, it's lunch.
Go drive to a suburb.
There's probably a good West Coast game that starts at 9:30 p.m.
on
Friday.
Not to get too analytical with it, but if it's brunch, it's a combo of breakfast and lunch.
Yeah.
So if breakfast technically is supposed to end at 11:59 and lunch begins at noon at 12:01.
Where are these rules posted?
Why can't breakfast leak into lunch the way lunch leaks into breakfast?
You're saying it's more at 1 o'clock, it's like Linner. It's like...
Yeah. I'm saying...
That's not as catchy of a name, though.
This Sunday, the best time for your super, super special brunch with your beautiful mom, Judy... 2:45.
2:45.
2:45.
And just do like a 10-minute, like five and fly?
I'll just make sure you're facing the television.
Yeah. Just have it on my phone.
Or watch the game on your phone during brunch because the Twins and the Anaheimers, thanks to Romero v. Ohtani Sunday in the Life Changer, they are ruining Mother's Day because you will have distracted man on a day.
That is true.
It's the perceived plight of the woman. On a day that belongs to the woman.
Yeah, do you think it would be insulting to the restaurant and my mother and everyone involved if I literally just prop my phone up and just have it right in front, against the glassware?
Yeah.
And just be like, I'm not going to mute it, but I'll turn the sound down.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be fair about it. Yeah,
be covert.
Yeah.
So, surround brunch-related items your phone.
Yeah, put some bagels around it and just be like,
and make sure you have bread stacked high, and you can lean it on that because it's sturdy, or you can do this. If you truly are interested, and by the way, for those who appreciate and or enjoy golf, I guess TPC, the Players' Championship, is considered the fifth major. Well, that comes to a conclusion on Sunday, too. So now you have man wanting to lay on couch and have the Sunday siesta that is watching golf, and you have the life changer Romero and Ohtani, but it's Mother's Day, wife, girlfriend, mom, grandmother. Whole day's about them. So if all of this is the case, While it seems to be in a potential L for the guys, given it's Mother's Day, I mean, who is going to tell super special wifey or mom they need to skip brunch to watch the twins or boring golf? So you plan ahead. Big Saturday night. Make it a big Saturday night. Celebrate Mother's Day and make it a big Saturday night. Breakfast in bed. Make the prime rib Sunday night. So, like, you put thought into it, and if it's a 10-pounder, then, you know, that mug's going to take about 3 hours. Start it at 3, 3.30, eat 6, 6.30, and we're sports snobs. We can't miss Romero Ohtani, but you have to properly acknowledge Mother's Day.
What do you do? That's a great plan.
Thank you.
Except what happens when that game goes, like, 19 innings?
Oof.
And then you just, yeah, it's not quite cooked yet. Like, it's just, you just stay over there. We'll bring it out when you're ready. And then you just go, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock.
That's when you set up a card table by the TV and you start Mother's Day dinner there.
Yeah. Well, I'm not in for 19 innings.
Yeah, I'm not in for 19 innings because it's not Romero Ohtani.
You're in for a good time, not a long time, is what you're saying.
I'm not there. I'm not there for Addison Reed, Frank Tanana.
All right, I got you.
I'm there for Fernando Romero.
You're not waiting around for Troy Percival.
And Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
That's the life changer.
It's not the worst plan you've ever said on the air.
Okay, now, given you are super controversial on Twitter, at Aaron Gleiman, you got splashy after Romero's Monday start by saying, suffice it to say, diseased. Clear as day to say, somebody's out. With Romero going great guns like he is.
Right.
Now, with Irv coming back, let's say, mid-June-ish, that could be 6, 7, or 8 starts. So you will have ample sample size. But who would it be?
I mean,
And isn't it funny how well Lance Lynn pitched after Romero had his outstanding start?
Was Lavelle's take on this basically that it's not something we should even talk about for another 4 weeks or something like that?
Yeah.
Essentially, and you said, we got to talk about it because it's your job to talk about stuff?
No, it was, if what we saw continues, then the heat potentially gets hotter start by start.
Sure. I think, especially with starting pitchers the way they are, with injuries and performance, I do think by the time Santana is ready to come off the DL, which at the very least will be early June, and might be later than that, it's going to probably solve itself because either Romero will keep pitching great, in which case you're not going to remove him from the rotation, or he'll struggle and make that decision for you, or, and I hope this doesn't happen, but obviously when you're talking about 5 starting pitchers over the course of a month, there's a pretty decent chance somebody gets nicked up along the way.
Good point.
Somebody goes on the DL, somebody has to skip a start, somebody has to do whatever.
Yeah.
And if, you know, a month from now, when Santana is ready to hop back into the rotation, all 5 current guys are healthy and pitching well, and Santana is healthy and looking good, yes, then somebody has to get dumped from the rotation, and there's a decision to be made. I would assume, I mean, it's not going to be Berríos.
Nope.
And if Romero's in the majors, he's going to
be Gibby.
And it's not, Gibson's been the best starter on the team so far this year, as shocked as I am to say that. Lance Lynn is obviously the one they have, like, the least investment in because it's a one-year deal.
After Romero does what he does Monday, isn't it interesting what Odorizzi did yesterday?
Yeah, Odorizzi.
In the business, we call it contagious.
The only difference between him and Lance Lynn is that they have Odorizzi under control for next year, too. Mm-hmm. So if they like him this year, they can keep him for next year at a reasonable salary. Whereas Lance Lynn, if Lance Lynn turns his whole season around and has an amazing second half and you know, finishes strong, he's walking and signing elsewhere as a free agent anyway. So that's part of the equation. I mean, I'm not ready to give up on Lance Lynn. He was awful. I mean, I'm not trying to dance around that. He's been awful except for like 2 starts so far. I mean, he hasn't thrown strikes consistently. He's just looked a mess. But we have seen at least a couple times, including his last outing, that he is certainly a capable middle of the rotation veteran starter. Mm-hmm. And I mean, when they signed him, that seemed like an ideal fit. It's a very nice problem to have. My guess is, as you said, once there's, you know, some film on Romero and hitters start to make a few adjustments and maybe he has an off night or two, he's not going to have a 0.00 ERA by the time Santana returns. I hope that he's still pitching well enough that, you know, people would be very upset if you send him down. But I do think, not to side with Lavelle, but I do think the problem will solve itself. But if you have to rank who's most likely to get the boot for Santana, I think it's probably Romero, just because they have the ability to send him to the minors, and that always kind of holds precedence. Not that it should be.
But you can't do that.
Well, you can't do it when he has a 0.00 ERA.
Well, I mean,
but what happens if he struggles 3-4 times?
Well, then, okay, but I don't believe he will, do you?
Ever?
I mean, I don't, well, no, of course he will. I mean, you've gone 11 and change right. with zero earned runs. Top of the previous segment, you're like fastball average is 96.
No, he's great. Don't get me wrong.
If we're looking at 6, 7, or 8 starts before Big Irv comes back,
right.
and it's relatively close to that, that there will be immense fan unrest
yes.
if you demote him.
You're definitely right. And I think, you know, if he's got a 3-something ERA with a good strikeout rate and he's gone 5+ in most of his starts, by that point, yes, then they're not going to demote him. I'm just saying, you know, yeah. if a 23-year-old pitcher looks like a 23-year-old pitcher and has some rough patches and gets knocked out in the third inning a couple times, that'll solve itself.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say that Lynn, among the non-Romero options and among the options that wouldn't have people picketing outside Target Field mm-hmm. if they were sent down, I think Lynn is, you know, could be demoted to the bullpen, could be sent down. But then that's the decision, too, because, you know, if a month from now you drop Lance Lynn, you're basically eating probably $8 million left on that contract, and you're essentially just writing that whole signing for $12 million off as a mistake because he's been so bad thus far. I mean, it's a great problem to have.
What about six-man rotation terrorism?
They could do that. They could sort of, especially with Romero being 23 and being 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery, and he's yeah. not a guy who's thrown, you know, 175, 180 innings a year in the minors.
Yeah.
You could certainly have him start every week instead of every 5 days.
But that gives Lynn an extra day to sit around and think about his bad start.
I always love that.
That's true. And also, as we've seen, the way the Twins have burned through the bullpen and have used their bench and all that stuff, it's very difficult to have a six-man rotation
yeah.
when they're basically filling 5 roster spots. And that mm-hmm. essentially just means you have one fewer guy in the bullpen. Now, hopefully those starters are pitching well enough that you don't quite need as many live arms in the bullpen, but
yeah.
it's not an ideal situation. But I mean, think of even last year, but certainly from 2011 to 2016 or so, mm-hmm. Any of these 6 options Twins fans would have killed for to have in the rotation.
Yeah.
I mean, they were calling up Johan Pino and just random waiver wire guys to fill into those spots. And now we're talking about this stud prospect or this $12 million former All-Star, are they going to be the one to get the boot? By the way, I don't think it's a safe assumption that Ervin Santana at age 35, who is already now behind the optimistic timetable they gave in spring training, I don't know that, A, it's a safe bet that he's going to be back when they say he's hopefully going to be back. And I also don't know that at age 35, given this finger injury, that he's just going to jump into the rotation and be a stud again.
Right.
I mean, he's getting older. He hasn't pitched at this point in over 6 months, basically.
Yeah.
And the last time we saw him on a mound, he was a mess against the Yankees. So that's another factor, I think. You don't want to make a decision that you can't take back. You don't want to release Lance Lynn and then have Ervin Santana struggle or get hurt again,
yeah.
in which case you can't get Lance Lynn back. Whereas if you demote Fernando Romero to the bullpen or to the minors, you can bring him back, you know, whenever you need him.
Now, Dallas Urich to the Bradshaw and Brian inbox, booth at KFAN.com. He may have the perfect answer
okay.
to the Mother's Day play.
Okay.
If you're into the Players' Championship and or Romero v. Ohtani, I mean, it might stick you $200, $300, $400, maybe even $500, depending on how long you want to do this. Send mom to the spa.
I always love that.
Yeah.
So you set up haircut, hair coloring, massage, eyebrow waxing, and facial.
Yeah.
And that whole thing, I mean, that feels like 4 or 5 hours, right?
Yeah, although that's
perfect.
You still need some face time, though, right? Like, you can't just...
In the morning when you wake up.
Yeah. Well, in the morning when I wake up, I'm not going to be by my mom.
Oh, good point.
Yeah.
I guess I'm more thinking wives.
I mean, yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you can like, make breakfast. I mean, it can be the easiest, scrambled egg, sausage,
yeah.
bacon, whatever, and then send mom or wife
right.
or, you know, whatever the clump is that day, because you're a sports snob, to the spa for 4 or 5 hours. It's going to cost a little money. Everybody's happy.
Yeah, I think that plan works really well for a wife. In that you'll probably actually get some extra credit because
yeah.
as much as they'd like some FaceTime with you, they're probably sick of you anyway. So
right.
sending them off on a day like that. The mom thing is you probably haven't seen your mom on a daily basis. I haven't seen my mom for a while.
Ooh.
You can't just say, I'm going to send you off here. Tell me how it went. Because mm-hmm. then the mom's going to go, well, I thought we were going to sit with each other at a table and eat. Right. And we were going to, you know, that I was going to complain about your family and do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, but, sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Rockets and Warriors.
Yes.
Should be fantastic. Here's what's perplexing to me.
Okay.
And I bring it up because you're an elite basketball mind. Clint Capella and P.J. Tucker are the best two defensive players for the Houston Rockets. Chris Paul is a good defensive player. Capella and Tucker change games. Against the Warriors, what do you do with Capella and or Tucker? I mean, clearly one of them gets Durant. I would assume the other gets Draymond Green. Yeah. But, I mean, do you go P.J. Tucker on Durant? Can Capella chase Green all over the place? I think it's perplexing.
I mean, that's why Durant is so, I mean, that's why the whole Warriors team is so tough. But that's why Durant is so tough is because you want a guy with size because he's, you know, 7 feet, basically. Except the guy has to chase him around screens all night, too.
Yeah, Durant will shoot over Tucker all game.
Right, because Tucker is a great defender and is as hard-nosed as you will find in the NBA. But what is he, 6'5"?
Yeah.
Something like that. He's, you know, Charles Barkley size, basically. And Capella was amazing in the Utah series.
Yeah.
Like, he might have been their MVP in the Utah series.
Way outplayed Gobert.
Yeah, he just dominated on both ends.
Yeah.
You know, he ran the court. He was blocking shots. He was catching lobs from everybody. He's going to have to, you know, deal with Draymond, which, A, Draymond's going to body him on defense. I think it's going to be a little bit tougher because Gobert is a great defender, but Gobert is more of a stay-at-home, you know, isn't going to be switching screens on the perimeter and stuff like that. I'm very excited about this because I feel like the Warriors are not quite at peak Warriors level, and so it gives the Rockets even a wider path to beat them.
Yeah,
and I think the Rockets, I was just looking at quotes from Maury, their GM, who basically said, we spent the last year and all our resources saying, what is the roster we could build that would beat the Warriors?
And he has it.
And they didn't work because they're like, we're confident we're going to get enough wins in the regular season to get home court, all that stuff. And they did exactly that. And now it's like, not only do you now have home court against the Warriors, which I saw Draymond Green pointed out, they haven't started a series on the road for a very long time, the Warriors. So that's a completely different look for them.
Yep.
But with all that said, if someone, first of all, are the Warriors favored? I'm going to assume they are. Vegas-wise. I bet it's close, but I'll bet the Warriors are...
I'd make Warriors minus 140.
Yeah, that seems right.
Maybe 150.
Because it's like you're the king until someone kills you, basically.
Yeah.
With that said, though, let's say they're even money. Who are you picking to actually win the series?
Warriors.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, Warriors minus 150, I'm taking the Warriors.
Yeah.
Hold on. In closing, it needs to be recognized 9 to noon. I mean, there are a lot of great postseason performances in the history of the NBA. Chris Paul last night, that's one of the great playoff performances in the history of the NBA. 41 points, 10 assists, 8 threes hit, and 0 turnovers.
Right. The 0 turnovers thing is crazy.
Are you kidding me?
And he was getting like so personally offended late in the game that he was just shouting and screaming and pointing at defenders and stuff, and then he was just roasting everyone.
Right.
And also, like, the thing I like about Chris Paul is he's so great and he's so specific about what he does that the Rockets, for years, their whole offense was, we don't shoot any mid-range. And Chris Paul came in and said, well, that's how I kill people.
Yeah.
Is I just, you know, just crush him on pick and roll.
Then he hits eight threes.
Yeah, I just stop and pop from 16, and then he expands it, and now he's a killer three-point shooter, too. So, I mean, there's so many great matchups in that series.
Mm-hmm.
And with that said, I think the Rockets are like the best challenger they've had in the West. And like you, I would still pick the Warriors.
Enjoy Mother's Day. Appreciate you. And I'll see you next week.
See you, P.A.
Aaron Gleeman, AaronGleeman.com. Back after the...
You're listening to P.A.
I don't really answer preschool questions.
On the Fan.
Check this out. Tickets are on sale now for the 5th annual Twin Cities Burger Battle. It's taking place May 19th. That's just a week from Saturday at Harriet Island. 25 local restaurants will compete for your vote and the right to be called the 2018 Twin Cities Burger Battle Champion. Purchase tickets. Find out more. Just go to tcburgerbattle.com.
What up, Saucy?
Hey, babe.
How, thanks for joining in studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We, 9 to noon weekly, like to play something called the Name Game.
Yeah.
And Sauce is kind enough to, Sauce from the highly touted, wildly controversial, incredibly successful Power Trip Morning Show, nice enough to compliment and amplify 9 to noon when we do it. We have a twist this week. I prepared the questions. You are battling Nordo.
Oh, I'd rather battle you.
Why?
Because when you don't know it or you feel bad that I haven't gotten any, you'll say something like, you know... What are you saying?
Just, he's not funny?
No, but just off the top of my head, you'll say something like, what's the lady's name? Kylie Page.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Lena
yeah.
Paul.
Yeah, right. Lena Paul. Or yeah. You'll say, you know...
Riley Reed.
Lexington Steele.
Yeah, ooh, Riley Reed. I think I've been putting far too many reps this week on the producer.
That's nice of you.
So I thought I'd give him a play off and let him play in the game every so often. So I prepared the names. Now, first, before we get to that.
Oh, this ought to be good.
Well, I was wondering, as I was preparing it yesterday, thinking about you and your lot in life. This thing that I've seen either on the website or on Twitter within the last week, how's the dating bit going?
I think it's going well.
Oh, really? It's still a thing?
Yeah.
Well, have they picked anyone yet, or is still accepting submissions?
And do you feel like they're auctioning you off?
Yeah.
Like, some $2 cheap piece of meat 3 a.m.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Some meat raffle at a bar in Waconia.
I know, your meat sauce, not meat raffle.
Yeah, and I don't care. It'll be a good time.
I certainly hope so.
I'm fun to be around.
Yeah, at least once.
At least once. Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah, so does it, I mean, you don't feel cheapened by the situation?
No. Why would I?
Have you dated anybody?
Now?
Yeah. Through the... The power trip. What's the bit?
Carly's going to pick somebody for me to go out with.
Yes. It hasn't happened yet?
No.
Oh, so Carly's screening the bit.
Yes.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Hockey and or Cove, they'd put you in some L-related situation.
Yeah, right.
I would end up going to dinner.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't mind that because, one, PA'd pay.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah.
Or I'd be like Rosen and I'd get up and stick you guys with the bill.
Yeah.
I'm a good big spoon.
Yeah. I don't care. Yeah, it'll be great. No, I don't care.
I got a friend of mine who at one point was in the blind dating business.
Yeah.
His nickname is the Big Chicken.
Yeah.
And like through the pictures or the information sharing or whatever, it just, photographically speaking, it just didn't add up to how he thought it was going to add up.
Sure.
And personality-wise, it was a little different, too.
Yeah.
So, like, they met in Bloomington.
Yeah.
And they're like, let's spend a day at Canterbury Park. You know, the races begin at 12:30.
Sure.
Let's spend some time there, get to know each other. Well, he all of a sudden lost all desire to spend even part of the day with said filly. So they both get in separate cars somewhere in Bloomington. Let's say it's Sensors.
Yeah.
And they're driving down 169.
Yeah.
He puts the pedal to the metal and tries to run away from her. Like, he's going 90 miles per hour, and she was, like, keeping up with him. And, like, looking at him going, don't leave! They all leave! Come on! And he just, I mean, you think Coran Robinson went fast through St. Peter?
Wow.
My man was zipping from, like, Shakopee, Jordan, the whole thing.
That's what she was looking for.
And he finally ditched her. So good for him, I guess.
Yeah.
Wow.
But you just got to be careful.
No.
Situations.
No, my bit is I would just say, I have to go to the bathroom.
And then leave?
And leave.
That's horrible.
Yeah, but that's worse.
So I was out with this gal, I think like 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. No, a week ago. And I sat down, meeting her for the first time, and she said, and I was, you know.
Well, how is Haley? Is she a nice girl?
It's not Haley.
Oh, sorry.
And she's like, this is weird, but how do I know you're not going to leave? I said, if I'm going to leave, I will say I'm going to go to the bathroom and not come back.
And if she's worried somebody's going to leave.
I wasn't going to leave. Yeah.
But if she's worried somebody's going to leave in that situation, many have already left before.
No, I don't think it's that, but I'm a wild card. You don't know what mood I'm going to be in.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You've seen me.
You've seen me stand
in that corner and literally cry.
Yeah.
No
on
joke.
My shoulder.
Oh, yeah, literally mm-hmm. on your shoulder.
With my head in the middle of your back grabbing your sides.
Worst day of my life.
Yep, it was terrible.
So about 10 minutes later, I go, I have to go to the bathroom. It was a joke. Great icebreaker. Worked. She laughed. Everything worked out.
Oh, you stayed?
Of course. I'm not going to do that.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not mean. I have a mean bone in my body.
I know. You're a sweetheart. Well, best of luck with the dating bit. And,
thank you.
I know you're going to keep the power trip up to date, but keep me up to date too, okay?
Well, yeah, you'll know if it's not going well.
Details, pictures, websites, the whole thing, okay?
What are you, my buddies?
Yeah, you're my surrogate little brother. I care about you. Nordo, you're playing the name game this week.
Sounds good.
Are you super excited?
I am, yes.
Good luck. You guys know the rules.
Yep. Yeah.
Names are buzzers.
Yeah.
I have three clues for each individual submission.
Yeah.
It was fun to prepare. First time I've ever prepared it. Crowd was loving it. I have 10 and yeah. one tiebreaker.
Okay.
Now, are you going to try?
It depends.
If I Please try hard.
Yeah, of course.
Do you want John Oates to beat you in a singing contest?
No.
Okay, then try hard.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't want Pizza the Hut to beat me.
Here we go. The name is Carl. The name okay. is Carl.
Okay. Carl Nordquist?
Are we ready?
Yes.
Number one. American actor and former professional football player. Appeared in Michael Jackson's Liberian Girl video and also had a part on the movie Happy Gilmore. Sauce.
Carl Weathers.
That's right.
That's what I thought. Okay, sweet. Damn alligator bit my hand off.
Last one was his name in the Rocky movie series was Apollo Creed.
Yeah, he's dead.
Number two. Sauce leads 1-0. Number two. NFL defensive player from Michigan State. First round pick in 1984.
Eric.
Nordo.
Is it Carl Dunbar?
Eliminated with one hint to go. Won Super Bowls with the New York Giants as a linebacker and is in their Ring of Honor. The name is Carl. Two.
Bill Carl.
Carl Banks.
No one knows who that is.
Nobody knows who Carl Banks is? You don't know who Carl Banks is?
I know who Carl Banks is now, yes.
Thank you.
No.
Number three, Sauce leads 1-0.
That was a great clue.
Thank you. Name
yeah,
that
was
game.
Awesome. Yeah,
name game.
Know who that is.
Yeah, Bill Ard yeah, Super Bowl yeah, story. Yeah. Come on.
Right.
The name is Carl, and here we go. Born in Germany in 1818, among other things, was known as a philosopher.
Eric.
Nordo.
It's not. Karl Marx.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Okay.
Nice job.
All right.
Why would I ever know that?
It's 1-1.
You sound like...
Here's number four, babies. Famous worldwide for his athletic achievements.
Eric.
Nordo.
Carl Lewis.
That's right.
Somebody's getting that ass kicked now.
He is one more.
It's 2-1, Nordo.
You asked me if I was going to try. Did you try when you put this together?
Shut up. Number five, name is Carl. It's the name game. Louisiana native who played his sport of choice at Louisiana Tech. Finished his career with the LA Lakers in 2004.
Paul. Carl Malone.
That's right.
It's 2-2. I have created equal action.
Cool story, bro.
Okay, number six. Name is Carl. Actor most famous for TV and film work in 50s, 60s, and 70s. He manned the streets of San Francisco. Come on!
Is he hot?
Won an Academy Award for the film A Streetcar Named Desire.
No idea. Nor
oh, it's...
Three. You got,
I'm thinking of Cary Grant. Two. It's not... I got nothing, sorry.
Carl Malden.
No one knows
okay.
who
Carl Malden, what do you mean? Streets of San Francisco.
Yeah.
I'm all right, here we go.
70.
Number seven.
These are great.
Shut up. Basketball player for Dean Smith's North Carolina Tar Heels in the early 70s.
Eric.
Nordo.
You got a
George Carl.
That's right.
Oh, I okay.
3-2, Nordo! What else was there? NBA Coach of the Year in 2013 with the Nuggets. Most famous for coaching Sean Kemp and Gary Payton with the Supersonics.
Cool.
Okay, number 8. Nordo leads 3-2. It's the name game. And the name is Carl. Edison, New Jersey native.
Paul.
Sauce.
Carl Anthony Towns.
That's right.
Yeah.
Sitting on it. And down the stretch they come.
The only one I could think of.
Nose and nose, it's tied at 3.
Karl Marx, like I'm going to know that.
We have 2 to go with a tiebreaker. We're tied at 3, biatches. Number 9. My clues are elite.
No, I thought it was,
my clues are elite.
Isn't Carl from Piscataway, New Jersey?
Not according to Wikipedia.
Okay.
Here we go. Debuted for the Montreal Expos in 1998. Last pitched for the Twins in 2012.
Paul?
Sauce.
Carl Pavano?
That's right.
And Sauce takes the lead in the shadow of the wire.
I didn't know he played for the Expos.
He did.
And finally, number 10, Nordo needs it to force the tiebreaker though. It's the name game. Here we go. Was the 1967 American League MVP.
Paul.
Sauce.
Carl Yastrzemski.
That's right.
Got it! And he wins 5-3. Well done.
Thanks, babe.
Tiebreaker quickly.
Okay.
From Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Collegiately wore maroon and gold. NFL Hall of Famer and part of the Purple People Eaters. Name is Carl.
Oh, Paul.
Carl, yeah. Do it.
Carl Hungus.
That's right.
Yes, that's right.
Carl Hungus.
Carl Hungus. Thank you, Sauce.
Bye.
Thank you, Nordo.
Thank you.
Back after this.
You're listening to PA.
They don't take no shit. Can I say that on the radio?
On the Fan.
News Denord.
Brought to you by Canterbury's Card Casino, poker, blackjack, table games all year round, and we are in the midst of a fresh new live racing season. So, get to canterburypark.com for all event details.
Number 1.
It was just icing on the cake yesterday.
Here's a deep drive to left.
Wow.
And Escobar tees off and hits one into the second deck. A big two-run home run by Escobar. And the Twins have busted it open 7-1.
Fox Sports North, Escobar's 7th home run of the year. Leads the regulars on the roster in batting average, .313. Does Escobar, 20 RBI. Hits in 14 of his last 15 games. Eddie Rosario. It's about the Eddies, PA. Eddie Rosario has hits in 9 straight, 17 total hits in his last 9 games. It's the Eddies. Team was 4-10 with runners in scoring position yesterday. Now the team is 15-17. Record sounds diseased, no doubt about it. Nasty losing streak, we know about that. But the team leading the division, the Indians, have now lost 4 straight. They're 17-18. The Twins are just a half game back. So they get to chill today. Head to Anaheim tomorrow for 4. Barrios on the mound tomorrow. And then Lynn on Friday. Gibby on Saturday. And as you mentioned it with Mr. Gleeman earlier, it's official. Fernando Romero versus Shohei Ohtani, Sunday afternoon, Mother's Day.
And
it's the showdown of the season.
St. Louis was diseased yesterday, kicking the ball around air after air, allowing extra outs in innings. And funny, you know, we've mentioned it multiple times now because being usurped and not wanting to be that person can be contagious. So Romero, 11 2/3, no earned runs allowed. Funny, Lance Lynn and Jake Odorizzi, Cy Young type performances. Funny how that works.
No doubt about it. Let's do this.
Now, PA offers you his AAA Mover of the Week. Brought to you by AAA Movers.
We talked about him just 30 seconds ago, and he was fantastic. Yesterday, or 2 days ago, let's do this again.
With the strikeout of Gant, Romero now has pitched 8 innings in the big leagues, and he has allowed 5 hits, 4 walks, and no runs. Here's a called third strike, another strikeout. Got him on a check swing. And on 3 pitches, Carpenter heads back to the dugout. What an inning. What an outing.
Fernando Romero, PA.
Triple-A Mover of the Week. He's fantastic. Can't wait to watch him on Sunday. Courtesy of Triple-A Movers and AAAMovers.com. Very courteous. I've been doing business for many years in responsible fashion. If there is any form of commercial or personal move that needs to be made, go to AAAMovers.com.
Number two.
Let's stick with baseball and the no-hitter in Toronto.
Paxton ready. Here's the windup and the 0-2 pitch. Swing and a one-hopper to third. Seager's got it. Toss across. Ball game is over. James Paxton has just thrown a no-hitter. The big lefty is getting mobbed out of the mound. The lefty from Lander, British Columbia has thrown the sixth no-hitter in the history of the Seattle Mariners franchise. The young man from British Columbia throws a no-hitter against the Blue Jays north of the border here at Rogers Center in Toronto.
KIRO Mariners Radio, James Paxton, first Canadian, kind of an odd thing, but whatever. He's the first Canadian to throw a no-hitter.
Wow.
In Canada, in Major League Baseball. Three hits, seven Ks, goes through the entire game unscathed. Now, underrated. Every time there's a no-hitter, there's always something that happens during the game that goes in the pitcher's favor.
Yeah.
Usually in the form of a defensive play. I'd like to share that with you.
Six scoreless so far. The only three base runners who have reached have taken ball four. Now on 2-2.
Whoa. Ground ball. Seager down to his chest. Rips it on a bounce in time. Wow. What a play.
Right down the line. Able to get up quickly, and a no-look throw. He just gets rid of it, and it's a perfect one-hop. Ryan Healy fired up, and why wouldn't you be? What a play.
Had to pull that off the TV copy, Root Sports. Kyle Seager and that dig that he had at third base to end the seventh, that's extra bases, and all the fun with Paxton is dead.
Wow.
So we celebrate the pitcher, but I think in every no-hitter, we also need to look at the great defensive plays that take place to help him get there.
And there was one in left in the bottom of the eighth. I think the guy's name is Gamel. Or Gamel, and it wasn't as good as what you just played. But see, I picked this bad boy up on extra innings, bottom eight, because that the sports snob sniffed out a no hitter bottom eight had to be part of it, and they kind of tagged Paxton a little bit that bottom eight. Good defensive plays. Bottom nine, he comes out there like a freaking horse. I mean, in hand, in command. In charge, just pumping that thing up there. Those Jays, the Jays had no chance, and it's always a treat watching the conclusion of a no-hitter with the celebration and stuff like that.
Number three.
To the NBA, the Jazz gave all they could, PA. Had a lead into the fourth quarter last night.
I got a lot of respect for this team.
I do, too. And Donovan Mitchell. So they're already missing Rubio. Didn't play a minute of this series. Donovan Mitchell with the knee knock on James Harden while driving to the hoop. He had to leave the game, and things just unraveled from there.
Fans want more. He gets double. They find Tucker in the corner. 4-3. Yes! And that'll do it! Rockets go up 10 with 35 seconds to go in Game 5. And the Rockets will make their way to the Western Conference Finals.
That's KBME AM 790 out of Houston. 112-102 the final. Valiant effort. Jazz dead, as most had expected, against this incredible Rocket squad. They move on to face these guys.
The Golden State Warriors have tied an NBA record with their 15th consecutive home playoff win. And for the fourth straight year, the Warriors head to the Western Conference Finals and a date with the Houston Rockets this time. Final score, Warriors 113, Pelicans 104. And the Warriors win the semifinal series 4-1.
What do you like? Warriors sans home court advantage, but with the championship equity, minus 190, or Houston with the beard, CP3 off the 41, good defense with Capella and Tucker, sharpshooters like Ariza and Eric Gordon, plus 160. So if you're betting $1,000 on this series, do you put up your $1,900 to win Vegas's grand and you get the Warriors, or do you put up your grand to scoop $2,600 from Vegas if Houston wins?
If I'm betting, I take Houston and the plus 160.
Really?
I mean, with the home court advantage.
Now, are you betting a number or a team?
in terms of, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I would bet.
It's a fat number, and you have Harden, and you have home court advantage.
Hmm.
And, I mean, you get, it's 1,000 to collect 2,600 to win 1,600, and you get Harden and Chris Paul to do it. You got to beat basketball immortality.
I might bet the number because what you saw from Chris Paul with the 41 last night,
yeah.
What you see when Harden's dragging and suddenly Trevor Ariza's in the corner, when you have freaking defensive bulldogs like PJ Tucker suddenly draining threes in your face, I just don't know with the home court. If I'm going to bet, I would bet on that team that just can't stop shooting. It comes from everywhere. It's terrifying, despite how good and great Golden State is, which is why this will be a 6-7 game series.
Okay, so what if it's a pick 'em? Which way do you bet?
Well, I got to go with Houston. If I'm going to bet on Houston, I'm betting on Houston to take this series.
I can never be mad at somebody for betting a dog.
And that's,
I can't bet against Golden State.
No,
so may God be with you.
That's okay, but there's no. This is one of those things, kind of like when we put the running the shirtless 40 on the line.
Yeah,
there's nothing on the line here either.
Right.
So I don't have to pay out. I never have to pay out. So I will bet on the underdog in this particular case.
Your opinion. You want to be right. You care about being right.
I think Houston could very much win this series.
Okay.
And if they shoot like they did against both the Wolves and now the Jazz.
Yeah.
I mean, and I just don't know how you beat that.
And honestly, I mean, it's a great take because when I think of playoff equity and getting to the NBA Finals, I think Timberwolves and Jazz, you know, not Warriors and how they play.
No. Jazz are a much better defensive team than anyone may be giving them credit for.
Uh-huh.
And they made it difficult at times, but because all they do is shoot and all they do is hit those shots, I think they deserve the respect that that I'm giving them in this case.
No doubt about that.
Let's do this.
Number four.
I got a number of things here. Scarves up tonight, 9 p.m. Fox
tonight.
Sports North. Yeah, it's a midweek match.
Weird.
It's LAFC, new expansion team, 9 p.m. on Fox Sports North.
Mm-hmm.
The Loons have won 2 straight, so be sure to tune in. They're in trouble. LAFC is incredibly good. Could be a midweek blow-up.
Oh, that's the Ibrahimovic bit, right?
That's LA Galaxy. Oh. This is Carlos Vela, Diego Rossi.
Whoa.
They got some big-timers that put the ball in the net. They score a bunch of goals. And this is one of those things, like, if you go on the road, like in hockey, good road point.
Yeah.
If they're able to squeak out a point today and draw this thing somehow, they should be very happy.
Good luck to everybody involved. Should be cool.
Number five.
And lastly, I just wanted to get your thoughts on this. The Wolves have let some coaches go. There were announcements made Monday.
Yeah.
Vince LaGarza, player development.
Yep.
Apparently somebody that worked really closely with Cat.
Yep.
Shooting coach Peter Patton. Assistant video coordinator Wes Bone. They were notified that they would not be returning to the staff in 2018, 2019, and beyond. But then this yesterday, assistant coach Rick Brunson. He had joined the Wolves when Tibbs came here. He resigned because of several instances or allegations, I should say, of improper conduct.
Yep.
Most recently...
That's why I sideswipe man.
Yes, that's part of it.
See? I'm telling you.
And typically you look for permission as well.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big part of the game as
it's
well.
It's your opportunity to become the first in iHeart Twin Cities history to file a male-on-male claim for having your sides grabbed.
Well, you've never gone too far with it.
The
so.
The Brunson situation.
It's awful.
Yeah, I mean, it allegedly is awful. We don't have any particulars. I read Johnny Krasinski, weekly guest 9 to noon and also with a Bumper to Bumper. He broke it. And it was on The Athletic. And I read it pretty closely. There aren't examples listed there with like, hey, in the tunnel at Target Center, this happened to me, or there's a text message or a voicemail or whatever, a saved snap of of like this happening. It seems like the smoke is billowing.
Yeah.
And where there's smoke, that they believe that there is fire, so they let him go. And
well, years ago, before he joined the team, there was a thing with a masseuse.
Yeah.
Like he had tried to get fresh or familiar with a masseuse.
That actually went to court.
And he was acquitted.
A judge heard the whole thing, and he's like, yeah.
So there was that as a background. If you're looking at building a character profile, then when you add in some of these things, most recently, someone that doesn't even work with the team contacted the Wolves with some concerns of an incident. So he has resigned. So there's at least four new faces that will be a part of Tibbs' coaching staff this summer and beyond.
And regarding the Brunson thing, you know, for those who were impacted and or affected, hopefully this situation has a happy ending. That's News du Nord. Eric Nordquist on lead vocals, and I'm Paul Allen. The Burke Bit in studio around the corner. It's 9 to noon.
You're listening to PA.
Happy for the relationships and experiences, along with the joys of meeting superstars like PA, you know, K-Fan.
On the Fan.
The Burke Bit.
It's the what ball? What was it?
Well, the song's called Thuggish Ruggish Bone, but I play it because we have the Thuggish Ruggish Burke in studio.
Yeah, from the Mendota Hype Mafia.
Correct.
But it started off by saying it's the something something ball.
Thuggish Ruggish Bone.
Oh, there we go. Nice vocals. Are we throwing back to the 90s here?
Pretty good. This was bumping at Crete and Durham Hall.
Oh, that's pretty nice. There it is. What up, Maddie?
How are you?
What's up, Berkey? You ready for Friday?
What's Friday?
Initials. Oh, Berkey on the power trip. And you might get embarrassed by a high school dropout.
Or I might dominate.
Well, you're smart. You're Harvard trained. What are you going to do if the initials are F-U?
I always love that one.
What's your first guess going to be, Berkey?
You know, quite honestly, I'm not super familiar with the initials game, how it's played. I think it'll take about 4 seconds to figure it out.
It's the most popular bit on the Fan and has been for 5 years. How dare you disrespect a radio station that now is providing you with no-name butcher quality meats and providing Matt Burke providing 9 to noon with hilarity, humor, biting a pip. He's nice enough to stop by during the Sports Abyss for a couple of segments with yours truly each and every Wednesday at 10:55, courtesy of no-name butcher quality meats. What do you like about all that?
Well, I might not know a lot about the initials game, but I do know a lot about meat, especially grilling it, and I am the grill master, PA, and you can't be the grill master.
Are you a grill master for real?
I am a grill master for real.
Have you studied up, or do you do it via instinct?
Self-taught. I think I do have some natural ability.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people, they'll kind of divide their lives into two phases.
Yeah.
Before they've had my grilled meat, and afterwards.
Same.
And you can't be the grill master.
Okay.
Unless you have a quality cut of meat, which is where no name butcher quality meats comes in.
Ain't no doubt about that. So say you are getting a no name butcher quality piece of meat, which is a steak. Say it's an inch and a half thick.
Yep.
Does Burke Bit like it medium rare?
Burke Bit's more of a medium rare plus. Like medium plus.
How do you do it? You're a grill master. Let me hear the secret, the trick to the trade.
First, you have to know, you have to get the quality meat from No Name.
Yeah.
And then you have to know your grill. You know, all grills are different. You got hot spots. You got cooler spots. And then I'm not into this, you know, 3 minutes on one side, then flip it.
What?
It's a feel thing.
It's a total feel thing.
Is that what you do on your grill?
It's a relationship you have with your grill.
Nordo doesn't have a grill. And it bugs me more than it bugs him.
Mine took an L, so now we're...
I'm at Doc One Bargains yesterday, a new bit I have, which, by the way, is phenomenal. It's on Excelsior Boulevard in Hopkins. And Jacob's Trading, basically, like, if there's a major closeout or, like, big stores closed, then he, like, swoops in and buys everything.
I like it.
And then, so, like, you get things for unbelievably cool prices, and they're like brand new.
Sounds like a St. Paul vibe.
So big time. Absolutely. Like right around West 7th or something like that.
Yep.
Right. So I saw a grill yesterday at Doc One Bargains.
We're still doing flea markets up my way.
For Nord, it was like $300. I'm like, bro, this is the perfect grill. infrared for searing on one side.
Sure.
The grill, the gas grill, and then like a charcoal bit on the right side. And it was like regularly $600, $300.
And he passed.
That's so, a good price. I haven't gotten down there yet.
Yeah, we got to get Main Man a grill. Can you spot him some cash?
I think. How can you not have a? You live in Minnesota and you don't have a. Are you an American?
No. This time of the year, you got to have a grill. That's why it bugs me.
I had a grill. The thing sucked. I got rid of it, and now I need another one.
You go
and
get
that
a
might
grill.
Be the one.
You get a grill. I'll bring over some no-name butcher quality meat, and we'll have ourselves a party.
Yes.
It's the relationship and the emotion that you have with your grill
right.
that makes the perfectly cured, no-name butcher quality steak.
All right, so we got this steak. 9 to noon recommends grill as hot as possible. I have a Napoleon grill from Warner Stellion, and it has like an infrared searing side.
17,000 degrees.
Right, so I've done that one time, and the medium rare bit came out perfectly. But say you don't have the infrared thing. Say you just have a gas grill. So pellet, charcoal, super special egg, whole thing off to the side. Grill as hot as you can get it, preferably 800. I think it's 4 minutes on one side, 4 minutes on the other. Turn that bad boy down, and then just let it cook for a little while longer. Succulent.
I'm not going to say you're wrong. I use a different technique. Like I said,
you want to sear it?
I'm a flipper. I sear it. I go hot. But I don't do the format. I don't time it. You know, I'll get the sear on the one side, get on the other, and then I just keep flipping it. I'm going to let you in on a little tip, all right? You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Closed circuit to you.
Pro tip.
And all the listeners out there who are aspiring to be the grill master, slap a little olive oil on it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
No, 100%. And then for me, it's like there are people who like Montreal steak seasoning.
Sure.
Which is cool.
It's cool.
But I like preferably, if it's going to be olive oil, salt and butter. Salt and pepper, but I like butter. So I will melt a stick of butter and then paint the butter all over the steak. Mm. Then the salt and pepper, then the searing, flip. Now this infrared bit on the Napoleon, it's unbelievable. I mean, you warm that infrared thing up for like, I don't know, 7 minutes, throw that thing on, 45 seconds, flip, 45 flip, 45 flip, 45 flip, over to the gas, which has been preheated at 350, and then you put it on the non-burning side of the thing.
Sure.
And then you leave it in there for 7 minutes. Perfect. Now, that
sounds like a lot of work.
You think winning the Super Bowl of grilling's easy?
Here's what I do. Fire up the charcoal, get it lit.
Now, see, charcoal's lit, and I don't have it.
You get a beer.
Right.
When the beer's done, your grill's ready. No, your grill's ready.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Now you prep the steak.
Yeah.
You slap it on there, the hot side.
Mm-hmm.
You open another beer, couple swigs, turn it.
Right.
A couple more swigs, turn it. Then you start turning a little bit faster, you know, if you don't want it to burn.
That's elite.
And then when your instincts kick in, when your primal meat instincts kick in,
right,
your beer will be gone and you take the steak off.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that's it. You're welcome.
Matt Burke.
So with initials, you are learned, you are Harvard trained, you are quick. Okay, so whatever the initials are, FU, BB, KP, whatever, Sauce ain't no joke in this game. Okay, now they do the game every week. Sauce has more wins than everybody. AJ, in the Silent Assassin, in very sneaky fashion, incredibly good at the game. So when you roll in here and the box, Corey Cove, starts unfurling these hints, it's difficult, man. It's difficult to beat Sauce, and he's a high school dropout, and you have a Harvard degree. You should be minus 140 in this thing, but you're not.
Is it based on current events, pop culture,
all sorts
Catholic
of things.
Doctrine? Yeah. What is it?
It used to be, it started out very, very sports heavy, mm-hmm. but now it has evolved into characters, things, items, companies, goods and services across the spectrum. So it's basically, it's a pressure cooker. You know, you were in Super Bowl 47 and you know how that felt. This is, there's a lot of pressure.
This is comparable.
A lot of tension.
Well stated.
Okay.
Well, the initials at 8:20 every Friday, widely considered the best bit of all of our shows going on the Fan.
That's as good as you got.
Most successful, highest rated whole thing of our core four from 5:30 in the morning till 6:30 in the evening, it rules the roost. Mm. So 9 to noon, Gravy trained it, and weekly I do something called the name game. It's like the junior varsity version of initials.
Like the minor leagues would be a good place right. for me to start.
It's not written as well. It only involves one name, and it goes markedly quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I did that today for Nordo and Sauce, and the name was Carl. The name was Carl, which means it could be either the first name or the last name. So let me read a couple of these and just see if you can get them, because it's similar to initials. You ready?
I think so.
American actor and former professional football player. Appeared in Michael Jackson's Liberian Girl video and also had a part in the movie Happy Gilmore. His name in the Rocky movie series was Apollo Creed. And
Carl
then,
Weathers.
Then you'd go, Matt, Carl Weathers.
Okay.
That's right. And then so you would get that.
Okay.
See, that was easy.
He was okay. A former football player?
I think he wasn't. Oakland Raiders for like a minute.
I didn't know that.
All right, how about this one?
Sounds made up.
From Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Collegiately wore maroon and gold. NFL Hall of Famer and part of the Purple People Eaters.
Carl Eller.
That's right. See, but it's taking you to three.
Yeah, I need to
get this. This is your morning workout before the race.
I need to get it at two.
Last one.
1.5 or 2.
Last one.
Okay.
Louisiana native who played his sport of choice at Louisiana Tech.
I know that. Hold on.
Matt Burke.
I played with him. Carl. I'm thinking of Kyrie. Go ahead.
Diseased.
that was terrible.
You're thinking of Kyrie Bear.
Yes,
the name's Carl, not Kyrie.
I thought it was Carl for
good.
A second.
Kyrie's a bear. My God, did Burke love him? Tice love him.
After mini camp.
Off four training. BA, come here. I'm going to put you on one. What are we talking about? A 3-year-old for the Preakness or Belmont? You got something you like? Yeah, Kyrie's a bear. Louisiana Tech or Lafayette? Unbelievable.
Greatest start ever to an NFL career.
No doubt.
It was like still July.
Okay, you have no chance Friday, by the way.
Went to Louisiana Tech.
Okay. Finished his career with the LA Lakers in 2004. Nickname was the Mailman.
Oh, jeez. Carl Malone.
Come on, Berkey!
You know what's confusing about that is in my head I'm thinking, is it Carl with a C?
Yeah.
Or Carl with a K? See, I was thinking C there, but Carl Malone was K.
Well, those are all first names. How about this one? Basketball player for Dean Smith's North Carolina Tar Heels in the early 70s. NBA Coach of the Year in 2013 with the Nuggets.
George Karl.
There you go.
See, I'm getting better.
There you go.
I'm getting better.
Yeah, you sped your work up as we approach the shadow of the wire.
8:20 in the morning is a tough time slot at the Burke House.
Yeah.
Got like kids going all over the place.
Ain't no doubt.
It's tough. That's a tough one.
Burke Bit in Studio, courtesy of No Name Butcher Quality Meats. More with Matthew next.
You're listening to PA.
When Muhammad Ali was down, did you count him out? When Jiminy Cricket was down, did you count him out? This is the game, Doug! Woo!
On the Fans.
Programming on the Fan brought to you in part by Prism Research.
So I can't get around it.
So low, you can't so get under it. Get
so high, you can't get over
so
it.
So high, can't get over it.
This is a chance. This is a chance.
Giveaway time, 9 to noon. You've heard us talking about it all week. It's Fogo de Chão Authentic Brazilian Steakhouse. Delicious meats. If you can't cook it on the grill at Burke's house, you go to Fogo de Chão and get the best meat, the best food, and the best vibe in downtown Minneapolis. I have a $150 gift card.
Good God.
To give away to
150? That's nice.
That goes a long way at Fogo. And here's what you got to do. You got to answer a trivia question for me. Meat Sauce Paul Lambert and I participated in the name game. And PA threw out a name that everyone on this planet should know. Very, very stout defensive player for the New York Giants in the 80s, I believe.
A linebacker. He bookended Lawrence Taylor. You might remember that those teams.
What was his name that we did not get? You give me that name and educate me. I'm going to give you a $150 gift card to Fogo de Chão. 651-989-5326, 800-320-5326.
Matt Burke.
It's the Burke Bit. Thanks to No Name Butcher Quality Meats. Matt Burke in studio. Some pressing topics into which we will dive beginning now. But first, the the O'Gara's comedy show. When is it?
Mm-hmm. That's Friday, May 18th.
Oh, geez, a week from Friday.
Week from Friday.
Holy cow! You got a website?
You can go to the Eventbrite and just Google Do Good, or I mean, I have millions of followers on Twitter. It's on my Twitter feed.
Who's the beneficiary here?
St. Joe's. Oh, St. Nice. Joe's Catholic School in West St. Paul.
What's the lineup of comedians?
We got Donna Ariando. Donna Ariando.
Okay.
Sounds like a comedian, right?
Hell yeah.
That's a good name for a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Got allegedly St. Paul's favorite son, John Marshall. I don't know if that's it's a self-proclaimed.
Jim Gaffigan.
Jim Gaffigan's not making this one.
Stephen Wright.
Not Jim Gaffigan, but Tim Flanagan, a.k.a. Larry Mondello guy.
That's sweet.
Myself, and then Russ Stolnack, an Emmy Award-winning comedian, flying all the way in from sunny San Diego, California.
Very nice.
Yeah.
That is a week from Friday, O'Gara's in St. Paul,
mm-hmm.
at Burke Matt via Twitter. Once you get all through and I have no problem with this, but once you navigate your way through all of the faith-oriented tweets and the motivational tweets mm-hmm. and stuff like that, you'll get to the super special Eventbrite bit. And that's where you can learn more about the O'Gara show.
Just scroll down. Just scroll down. I'll retweet it right now, so everybody.
If you want me to help you get some followers, I'll retweet you.
That would be sweet.
I always love that.
That would be sweet.
Best ever, Burke Matt. Vikings rookie camp came to a conclusion this weekend. How does one evaluate linemen off a rookie camp? I was there Friday. It was a little clippy. The negatives were there. It was hot. And I had to run to Canterbury. So then I came back on Sunday where it was like more of a chill, but it was shorter and just kind of took it in. And I'm like, well, the second round pick is an offensive lineman from Pitt. The sixth round guy is a guard who's thicker up top than I thought he was. The O'Neal bit is built like Khalil, and he's opposite second year Northwestern guy Ifeadi Odinigbo, who was on the practice squad a lot last year. So they're going head to head. But it's tough. Isn't it tough to evaluate linemen at a rookie camp?
At a rookie camp, no pads. I think you're looking for a few things. One, you're looking, especially for the rookies who haven't been there yet, how quickly are they picking, you're not going to know the whole offense, but how quickly are they picking up the schemes, you know, the concepts? How's their technique? You know, how raw are they? Because in college, so many of these guys can just get by on being physically better and physically more developed than their opponents. I think you're looking at how they move, you know, how they bend. And then even though you're not in pads, I mean, it was always such a pain in the ass when you'd go to these things as a player because you're not wearing pads.
Yep.
But you're going pretty hard. Like, you have to compete. So
it was more physical than I remember.
It always is. And coaches, you know, you can't back down. You want to see. I mean, you got to, you know, the coaches take care of each other. But at the same time, you better be. Don't let that guy out-tempo you across from you. So you do want to see how guys compete. And if, you know, if. Like what Dante Scarnecchia, the great O-line coach from the Patriots, told me once the year that he was out of football, he said, you got to see if that dog will bite. And that's what they're looking at. That means is the guy willing to compete.
So for everybody, you know, with the rookies, the undrafted guys, the whole thing, but specifically the linemen, training camp and preseason games, that's the best place to evaluate them, right?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. That's where you're
going. Because that's where it all comes together. Were you paying attention when we first met you at rookie camp through OTAs? That then, maybe most importantly for them, after mandatory minicamp mid-June, we shut it down for mm-hmm. 4 or 5 weeks. What did you do then? Mm-hmm. So that's a very important time.
That's that's when the bullets are live. You know, they're breaking everything down now. You're going through progressions, and you're going slowly. Once you get into training camp and preseason, every day you're installing new stuff.
Yep.
And can you keep up? Can you take what we're talking about? We have this meeting. It's jam-packed. We're throwing all this stuff at you.
Yep.
Now we're going out on the field. Can you carry it from the meeting room to the field? How quickly can you adjust on the field during a series, you know, during a play, in the huddle, whatever it is? You just want to see how quickly guys can get it, how quickly that switch can get flipped to on.
What was 98 rookie camp like for you at Winter Park? Rookie camp, not – you've told the story – you know, the initial times you were opposite John Randall, you know, and then him trying to, like, raise you and everything. You know, while intimidating you but joking along the way, but, like, at rookie camp, what was that like for you?
It's stressful. I mean, it's stressful. I had no idea what I was doing or where I was. I mean, it's like you're almost not even there because so much is going on, and you don't even know what's right, you know? I mean, you're just trying to make sure you're on the meeting on time and you're worried about – getting hazed by the veterans and then yeah. throwing all this stuff at you. I mean, it's just a blur.
Yeah.
It really is just a blur. And you know, I knew I stunk. I knew I was horrible. And it was just like, I don't know, just go home and try to sleep and get up the next day and come back.
But then you made the active 53 in 98.
I did.
You weren't practice squad guy.
I turned the corner.
That's nice.
Where the switch flipped for me was when we went over to River Falls and scrimmaged the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And it kind of hit the wall there. I mean, it's kind of like the military. Like, we're just going to break you down until you finally say, enough's enough.
Yeah.
And that's when it happened over in River Falls, where I started to actually block a few guys. And I thought, hey, you know what? I can do this.
Were you big?
Weren't you
angular and kind of slender when you started?
No, I was 308. I was kind of puffy, you know, sort of chubby and
right.
I mean, I was big enough. I was big enough.
Down memory lane we go. Do you remember Don Beebe?
I do remember Don Beebe.
His son Chad is here.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's listed as 5'11". Okay. He ain't 5'11". So I'm watching him run around rookie camp, and he is part of the college tryout, so he doesn't have a name on the back.
Ah.
So I like look at the super special card, and name says BB. And sure enough, it's his son. So that's I'm awesome. Like, all right, I'm going to get a bit out of this. I got 45 segments during the course of the week. I'm going to spend one segment about how Don BB from Chadron State in Nebraska, nobody counted on him. He was little. He got drafted in the third round. And he was actually kind of highly touted out of college.
He had a great career.
Five Super Bowls,
great
though.
Great career.
How many Super Bowls you go to?
One.
Yeah, he won one out of five.
He made one of the greatest plays, yeah. I think, greatest hustle plays ever. When Leon
one of
Lett,
the most famous plays in the history of the NFL.
Leon Lett was coasting to the end zone,
yep.
And Don just did not give up and knocked it out of his arms. Right.
You know what makes that better? Dallas was winning 52-17 when he did that. Seriously.
That's awesome.
You think Kyrie Zabair is going to run somebody down trailing 52-17 in the big game nationally televised?
Absolutely not.
With a right to change this opinion after training camp and preseason games, from what you feel now, how do we handle Laquon Treadwell this season? Third year, zero touchdowns. First round pick status is gone. Forget all that. Can't be like he was a first round pick. Has to be on the team. Has to play. That's rearview mirror, in my opinion.
You better see a big jump from the first day he's in there, the first practice. You better see something different.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I mean, it's been 2 years. They say the biggest improvement occurs from year one to year two.
Mm-hmm.
You had that. You didn't get that spike you were hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not markedly different starting on day one, then I would not be real hopeful that it's ever going to change. And you're going to go through your camps, you go through training camp, you go through preseason. If it doesn't change, you're going to move on.
Eric Reed is going after the NFL, claiming he's being blackballed. We've gone through this with Colin Kaepernick. Eric Reed, former safety, San Francisco, high pick out of LSU, has had what I was told yesterday by somebody who would know more about it than me, an underachieving career. Not bad room for him in the NFL with the way he plays, but you know, speaking of like Treadwell. You know, did not live up to that first round pick status.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what are your overall thoughts on this?
Well, two things. I mean, what you just said, underachieving, if that's true, and I don't know anything really about D-backs, but right, NFL teams have shown that if the juice is worth the squeeze, they'll tolerate a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I think the whole thing with Kaepernick and Reed and any of the players that participated in the anthem protest is this. I mean, are those guys good enough to? Is there a spot for them in the NFL? Are they good enough? Yes. If everything else is just nothing, here's what those guys did though. They violated the number one rule of football, which is you put yourself or your causes or whatever in front of the team. You made it about you when you stepped on the field, which that is the number one core value of football. We know some guys have lots of stuff going on off the field. They do stuff that probably is not helping them and helping the team. You know, it's not helping them play up to their potential, whatever that is. But the rule is, when you come in that locker room Sunday morning, it doesn't matter. You might be in a fight with your wife. There might be some tragedy going on, this and that. You put all that behind you, because when you come into that stadium on game day, it is all about the team. And that's why I think that not just you can say, well, it's going to be a distraction, but that's where it's tough for teams to bring these guys in.
Yeah.
Because in the locker room, other players resent that. Resent that, that you made it about you instead of the team.
And so these two, if they stand for the anthem and make it about the team, with your National Football League fame, specifically Kaepernick and or Reed, if you want to have a platform to make something known about the way you feel, don't you believe you subsequently can get with, say it's you and you're super negative on something political, but you're going to stay part of team. So it's not going to be anything involving the day of the football game. Don't you think you could pull Baltimore Sun beat writer, columnist, or somebody aside and say, I want to chat with you about something that's very personal to me. And if you think it's story worthy, then by all means go with it, as opposed to doing it the way it's been done.
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. Every guy has causes they work for, things that they're passionate about. So do I. But at the end of the day on Sundays, I mean, at the end of the day, it is a business. They're paying you to go out there and play. And, you know, you might not like it. You might disagree. People, not everybody agrees with you. Not everybody agrees with everybody else. That's fine. You know, that's the great thing. But when you step out like you did, you're 100% free to do that. But other people have rights too. And you have to live with the consequences of your action, even if you think you're right. I've lost business. I've had people book me for events and then come back later and some C-suite exec said, no, we can't have him. He's too controversial. That's fine. You know, that's your opinion. You know, I mean, that's okay.
Right.
We all make decisions. We stand for what we think is right. And if there's consequences, it might not be right. It might seem unfair, but that's life, right? I mean, you have to respect other people's points of view and other people's rights as well. But I really think it goes back to it's hard to bring those guys into a locker room. And you're talking about how important team is and the ultimate team sport. It's hard because I know that there's resentment there from some guys because of not because they might disagree with the tactic and what they did and all that, but because they violated that number one core rule of football, is that you don't do anything, you don't put yourself above the team.
So do you think teams are blackballing Colin Kaepernick?
Well, see, to me, blackballing is a term that means unfair.
Do you think X amount of teams will not employ Colin Kaepernick because of his political beliefs?
Not because of his political beliefs, because he's too, like I said, he'll create division in locker room. There will be guys in there that will resent him, and it will affect the team cohesion and the ability to come together. Yes, absolutely. Because is Colin Kaepernick good enough to have a spot on a roster in the NFL? Yeah, he's good enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of guys that are good enough, but because of whatever other things they're doing, might not be, if you think what Colin Kaepernick did was noble,
yeah,
that's fine. It might not be as noble as that, but there's a lot of guys who are good enough to play in the NFL who aren't on rosters because of certain choices they've made.
So Kaepernick and or Reed, they file grievances against the NFL saying we are, quote, being blackballed, end quote. On the other side of it, the owners, the coaches, the GMs, whatever, honestly, as simplistic as it is, and tell me if I'm wrong, all they have to say is, A, we don't think you're as good as you think you are, mm-hmm, and B, we don't want you in our locker room. And we have the right to not want you here, and don't exactly have to say why we don't want you here.
Period.
That's it.
It's about that simple,
because
right?
Then the representation for Reed and or Kaepernick would be, well, why don't we want you here? We don't like you. We didn't like you when you played for San Francisco. I didn't like you when you played at Reno. I didn't like you when you played at LSU. I don't like you. I don't want you around, and I have the right to say that.
When Randall McDaniel was released by the Vikings after, I think he played 12 years with the Vikings and was still playing at a very high level, but it was a contract issue. There was all sorts of, Randall McDaniel got his termination notice from the Vikings, because I remember I was working out at Superstar's house, and Randall brought it over. And the box that was checked, I can't remember exactly how the wording was, but it was basically, your performance is no longer satisfactory.
Yeah.
First ballot Hall of Famer.
Right.
You know, one of the best ever. And you're saying, your performance isn't good enough, you know, because you have to give a reason, right?
Technically. Oh, come on.
But everybody knows, right? I mean, everybody knows. And that's why these lawsuits, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but it's goofiness.
Last one. I'm old guy dad at 52, boys 17, girls 15. Nordo is young guy dad. What are you, Nordo, 32?
I'm 33.
Nordo's 33, has twins, age 3, right?
Age 3, just turned 3 last Saturday.
Got, Stella.
Got twins, yes. Age 3. So you're right in the middle of 41, which leads us to, it could be a what would Burke do? Or, but maybe more importantly, what would dads do? We can take emails on this, by the way, Eric at KFAN.com, because it involves him. What were you telling me about the what would dads do earlier this week?
Oh, well, I'm in the meat grinder. One of my kids may have a peanut allergy.
Mm.
And it's absolutely killing me. Babysitter doesn't know any better. She's the best. I love her. This is not ripping the babysitter, but while we're gone, she gives him peanut butter toast. Next day, kid's got swollen lips.
Well, now, did you know said child had a peanut allergy?
No, we did not know.
Okay, so you uncovered it this way.
Everybody was in the dark on this.
Wow, you got lucky.
Allergy appointment, blood test yesterday.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking about my baby girl, Ava. Stella, by the way, identical twins, no problem. She'll eat peanut butter all day, apparently. How unfulfilling a life that I am giving her as a father. With all the things that include peanuts in them, she'll never be able to enjoy. You have 7 or 8 beautiful children.
8.
How would a father in your position handle something like that? That bombshell of an allergy in a house where it's about quantity and groceries, getting everybody fed, getting everybody outside. But then there's the special one.
That's tough. It is a less fulfilling life if you can't partake in peanut butter goodness.
Especially when twin sisters having PB&J, which every kid has and loves, the other one can't have it. It's a major L.
You know, even maybe worse, and not to, I know you're still dealing with this, Nordo, even worse than not being able to enjoy the peanut butter experience of putting it in your mouth, but she might have to sit at the allergy table at lunch.
Yeah.
You know, be ostracized from that lunch table where so much growth and life lessons come from. I would do this.
Yeah. When you bring snacks to your kids in elementary school, and me doing book club for 4 years for my kids, like I would bring snacks and they would point out to me, you can't bring snacks with peanuts, nuts in them.
And then you're
that parent.
And then unfortunately, it's just an automatic response. You resent that kid for having the peanut allergy.
No doubt.
Or like when you're on an airplane and they're like, hey, we're not serving peanuts. Yeah. So you're like, damn it.
Last time I knew about a 5-year-old to go through this as a female, she ended up very Janis Joplin-like and she went goth. I mean, her fingernails were black by age 9.
And she hated her dad.
Yep.
But do this.
Affecting my relationship with her already.
Do this.
Just give it to her and deal with the fat lips.
I just saw this on the news like 2 days ago. There's this therapy that they're doing. It's not approved by the FDA, but they basically start by just like you get like one peanut and then they'll put it like around their lips and their mouth and you build up. You have to go every week for a year.
Yeah.
And by the last treatment was 24 peanuts. And they actually, the kid didn't like the taste of peanut butter because he was like 10 and had never had it. So he hadn't developed an affinity for it.
Yes, Matthew. Yet.
So they took it and put it in a smoothie for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he built up his tolerance from like just a minuscule amount the first week to 52 weeks later, 24 peanuts in a smoothie.
You're a great
dad. They're having great results. So I'm here to tell you, Nordo.
Yeah.
There is hope. Ava has hope.
There are many
you
around
have
this
made my
office.
Day, Matthew.
There are many within the Mendota Hype Mafia who tell me privately when they slide into my DMs, as a coach of kids, you're very Mr. Marinovich-like. I'm here to dispute that.
Yeah.
That was laid out perfectly with a game plan. You went from the rookie camp through OTA, mini camp, training camp, preseason, regular season, up to the Super Bowl of handling food allergies, and you won the game.
There's only one downside, Nordo.
What's that?
This peanut immune allergy therapy, it's not covered by insurance, and it costs you $20,000.
Ooh!
That's it, though.
Thank you, Burkbit.
My pleasure.
You should have quit while you were ahead.
Matt Burke, at Burke Matt via Twitter. Learn more about his comedy show at O'Gara's in St. Paul a week from Friday by going to his Twitter handle, at Burke Matt. And those segments are courtesy of No Name Butcher Quality Meats. Final segment for this Wednesday, 9 to noon, is next.
You're listening.
listening to PA.
Time for two more.
On the Fan.
I can't wait. Football feast.
I can't wait until tomorrow. Cause tomorrow might very well be too late.
Come one, come all, because it's a giveaway day again. 9 to noon. So many tickets and cool things to give away. I'm elated. And to you, caller number 9-651-989-5326, 800-320-5326. You're dialing before you even know what you are going to get. And it's tickets to Hall & Oates and Train, May 16th at XL Energy Center. Hall & Oates, Train, X.
Patrick Monahan,
May 16th.
Singing in the concert tour's debut.
Yeah.
Within the last week, Sacramento. And they're playing big arenas. You know, despite Daryl Hall being 72 and John Oates being 71, it's the most successful duo in the history of music. When I saw them at O2 Arena in London, I mean, seriously, it was amazing. We're there for the Browns.
Yep.
Daryl Hall and John Oates are at O2 Arena in London the night before. So, of course, we had to go. Like 21,000 people there. XL Energy Center was close to sold out when I saw them last year. They play at like Scott Trade Center in St. Louis State. So they're playing big spot arenas. In looking at the set list for what's coming up for the show. See, and if you get free tickets and you want to go see Music Immortality, Train is the opening act. Patrick Monahan sings songs during the Daryl Hall and John Oates set. So he joins Daryl Hall and John Oates and does certain songs. Like, one is a slow song called Wait For Me. Absolutely beautiful. We played it on the show before. It, I believe it's from the 1979 or 80 Ecstatic album. Was not a popular album for Daryl Hall and John Oates. And Wait For Me was not a nationally popular song. But if you get the opportunity, like, sports is my living. I'm compensated to follow sports, talk about it. And I love sports, don't get me wrong. But, like, my passion for a chill is to sit in the sinkhole and watch certain artists, bands, or concerts via YouTube and just, like, chill out to that for, like, 30, 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
And so if you, in your sinkhole, if you YouTube Wait For Me, Train Daryl Hall, you will see an unbelievably good rendition of a slow, very cool song. So they do that song together. Here's the deal. And again, if you got free tickets to the show, by all means go. So even though Daryl Hall doesn't bring it like he used to, you still will be able to say, I saw Music Immortality, where they do Maneater, Kiss On My List, Private Eyes, Rich Girl, Sarah Smile, She's Gone, I Can't Go For That, You Make My Dreams. Daryl Hall and John Oates have always been good about doing the hits. But here is the cliched fly in the proverbial ointment, according to this super sneaky set list bit to which I'm privileged because I'm part of the Daryl Hall and John Oates fan club. The first show in Sacramento, they did as many songs in that show as I can remember at a Daryl Hall and John Oates show. So, like, they're covering two Train songs with Monahan, one called, like, Call Me Angels. I'm not outside of the Teardrops Jupiter bit, and then another one.
Well, it's this is the one, Soul Sister.
Yeah.
This is the one I like when he does it. I think this is from Live at Daryl's House.
Yeah, yeah. This is only Train. Only the Train will do that in the opening act. And the Teardrops from Jupiter.
Drops of Jupiter.
Thank you. Train does that as part of its set. So, but there are a couple of Train songs. One's like Call Me Angel. Then there's another I'd never heard of, but I subsequently have listened to them, and they're both good. They do that. They do those songs in tandem. Daryl Hall, John Oates, Patrick Monahan.
Ooh.
Now, at the first show, Monahan joined for 8 songs as part of the Daryl Hall and John Oates set.
Wow.
Which is good because his voice is from the high note standpoint, markedly stronger than Daryl Hall's now. So, from what I understand, he compensates in the Hall and Oates songs where Daryl no longer can get.
Mm.
I'm very intrigued by that.
they covered the Temptations. Papa was a rolling stone.
Yeah.
Ever he lays his hat was his home. They covered that. Then the next two shows, for whatever the reason, smaller crowds, bad vibes, whatever, they cut the set list, didn't do Papa Was a Rolling Stone, and Monahan only joined for three songs.
What?
So it's, well, let's put it this way. If you're Daryl Hall and John Oates, and you've been doing this for 50 years, and you still can play O2 Arena in London and put 21,000 people there.
Not bad.
And get 275 minimum for each show. 72 years of age, $275,000 minimum is what they get to do a show. They look at it like, crowd, you need us more than we need you. We were here before you got here,
yeah,
and we'll be here after you're gone.
And even if we're not, we're going to get paid a lot while we're still here.
So you either pack it, and if you don't pack it, you be into it. And if you're not into it, we will cut songs right out.
The check still cashes.
I've seen shows with Daryl Hall and John Oates where they have been, the crowd has just sat back and just wanted to watch music. Daryl's like, nah. So they cut songs out. They fly through the songs, kind of like what you would hear on the record.
Yeah.
And thank you, Minneapolis. Good luck. I've also been at shows where they've added songs. They've thanked the crowd. You're phenomenal. Thank you. What a great stop on the tour. See you next year. And they just go nuts. So I'm curious to see, because I'm still not sure if I'm going next Wednesday.
How many times have you got? You've been to 30 plus shows, haven't you?
Yeah, somewhere in the neighborhood of that.
Oof.
All over the place. D.C., New York City, Tahoe, Vegas, Los Angeles, San Francisco, St. Paul, Minneapolis, Chicago. I've seen them all over the place.
Well, I'm happy for you, because I remember 2 years ago now when you saw them here, maybe it was just a year ago, you were super negative,
yeah,
on the voice of the lead singer.
I said I will never go see them again because I can't do it because of the lead singer's voice. But that turned out it was North America, yeah, because then they played in London, and I'm like, I kind of got to go. So now I might be sucked back in because of the Monahan bit, but I have to get more set list intel before I can confirm. I can confirm we are at Twin Cities Orthopedics Performance Center tomorrow, the Vikings practice facility, with Pete Bursich, Ben Lieber, Wobby, and defensive tackle Sheldon Richardson. I'm Paul Allen, Nordo, Rap, Show.
From the Holiday Station stores.
Jesus!
That is not,
come on,
what I was looking for.
There we go.
Man, that's some production for you on a Wednesday. Thanks to the Paddy Wagon for sponsoring the 9 to noon show. Raps, 61st and Nicollet. All the moments we have on 9 to noon on the air with PA, his 10 chins and his bright silver hair, with topics about which you think we wouldn't care, like women wearing high heels, so painful it's not fair. We go places that others would never dare. We never shy away from super giant controversies. Hard answers to hard questions, keeping it real. Listen tomorrow when PA explains the Iran deal. Just kidding, we're at TCO in Egan at Fresh Vikings Radio Studio. Bursich and Lieber and your main man, Wobby, who's been camping out for 3 days in the main lobby. Wobby!
Ooh, you got away with a cookie right there. Get foul. Well, that's a can of corn. Mercy. Mercy.
In a time like a Monday.
I love it, baby!
Woo! Keeping your head up above water.
To noon.
Fire away.
Temporary labor.
P.A.
Personal foul. Clipping.
Good times.
Son of a.
Surviving. Time for two more.
Good times. If it's good news or money, leave a message.
To listen back to a podcast of today's show, visit the Paul Allen Channel on the iHeartRadio app or go to KFAN.com.